the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, we are in episode 424, and we are dwindling down to the final parts of what is usually kind of off-season news. Cardinals had rookie camp. They're about to start up OTAs next week, but there's a couple of things that we just can't shake. I don't want to talk about a whole lot, but one of them is that there's new wrinkles to the Terry McDonough case. We've got Buda Baker's not happy still. And from there, it's just, we get some insight. I know some people didn't care, but Kevin Cobb, if you've followed the Cardinals for long enough, what a tough story for a guy that I know I was super excited about. But how are things for you these days?
They're good. They're just busy. It's off-season football work, and so that's what we go with now. And there's a lot of stuff to it, and that's where we're at. And we're just going through it, and trying to stay positive about this Arizona Cardinals thing, because we want to enjoy this. We want to be positive about the new situations, but it feels like so many of the old situations just keep popping up.
Yeah, it is. One of the things that's come up, we're not going to talk really about it, but it came out on Monday that with the Terry McDonough complaint against the Cardinals and Michael Bidwill, is that with that really heavy-handed response that the Cardinals released through their representation, kind of releasing, basically detailing all the ways that McDonough kind of sucked, he now added two more things to his complaint now: defamation of character and invasion of privacy. So this thing's gonna drag on for a long time.
Didn't we kind of wonder aloud about that from the beginning too? Like, what was, I mean, off the record, not on this, obviously, I think we all talked kind of, were like, whoa, what are they doing dragging the dirty laundry into the street, right? But
we talked about how it was like a game of chicken, because the one thing that Cardinals have mentioned is that McDonough was holding this thing over their head for a long time. And so this was a game of chicken. Cardinals were building up their, okay, whether or not it was like malicious, but they're like, hey, we've been working with you, Terry, or dude, you keep hanging over, we've got our dossier on you. And it's like finally someone barked, and then the other said, okay, here's the stuff.
Right. And it just felt like, it also just felt way out of line for an employer to publicly respond that way, right? Like, it just didn't seem like what you would expect, especially, and I know, Michael Bidwill was a prosecutor, but, it's one of those situations that you just look at it and you are kind of surprised to see it go as aggressively as it did. So,
isn't that kind of par for the course for guys like McCarthy, who's representing the team, is that is the sort of representation that they go with on the offensive, rather than just letting their client get accused of stuff. They're like, no, okay, this guy is not and basically trying to get him, getting McDonough tried in the court of public opinion before this ever reaches arbitration.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the unfortunate part of it, and it's just interesting that it just seemed incredibly heavy-handed. I don't know how you felt, but like it just
like,
felt,
whoa. That my reaction was like, whoa.
Yeah, and it just, you know, it's just one of those situations that you look at it and you're like, I mean, we knew that of some of this stuff, right? We had an idea, but to go so hard was just a really interesting choice. And so it'll be interesting to see how and why and what, how this all plays out in the end, because it just feels like right now the Cardinals put themselves in this position where we're dealing with this instead of, like you said, just let it go, right? Like, hey, we'll deal with this behind closed doors. We will, we'll, you know, whether McDonough wants money or whatever, apology, I'm not sure, but you know, like let's get that taken care of. And instead, it just ended up being something way more. And now it just feels like this is gonna kind of linger out there, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of the same situation. We're going to lead with this show. We're four basic topics. We're going to talk about Buda Baker, the latest of his unhappiness. Touch on the Kevin Cobb story. I think it's super intriguing. I'm very interested in at least some of the twists and turns that takes for the Cardinals. What the defense is actually going to kind of look like as a base. And then, I know this is lame, but, you know, looks like we're going to have a new punter and long snapper in 2023. So let's start with Buda. Buda Baker, we already know, requested a trade from the Cardinals. This happened before the draft. He approached the front office seeking a contract extension, seeking to get a raise after what he's done over the last couple of years. Since his last extension, he's got 2 years left on the deal. Cardinals basically said, nope, we're not interested right now. There's a lot of reasons why they wouldn't do that. They really haven't committed much money to anyone other than Kyler Murray beyond 2024. And even then, though, you know, Kyler's contract is structured in a way that you could change directions by then. They don't give him the contract extension. They don't do anything with his contract, and he requests a trade. And this offseason in particular, his social media message has been one of he is disrespected. And that was the latest one on his Instagram story on Tuesday. And he's doing a workout. And physically, that dude is cut. Like, as it's been described, he's got abs on his back. Just how much he's been working out. But as he's doing his lifting, There's the caption. There's a question. Buda, how you feeling? He's like, I feel like I'm being disrespected. Cryptic at best, or cryptic at worst, and referring directly to the Cardinals is kind of the situation there. How much do you think this is chip on the shoulder? This is creating chip on his shoulder to go and perform better. How much of that is energy directed at the team?
Yeah, it's interesting because it just feels like sometimes it feels like he's yelling into the wind. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just not sure what his expectation or what he wants from this.
I know at minimum what he would like is guarantees for this year, which honestly seems like an easy thing to do for the Cardinals. There's different ways to do that just to, and I've often wondered why teams don't do that more often. We saw it have a couple three years ago with like Julio Jones. I think they kind of did that where it really wasn't necessarily any more money but they guaranteed more of the money of the upcoming season. If there's a little bit of concern for security, because he has no guarantees left, an easy thing to do would be to, hey, Buddha, let's guarantee your salary this year. I know that does cost the team up front with that stupid escrow rule that they've got, which another day we'll talk about that. And if we've mentioned it before, it's a dumb rule. It, basically, I think what it is that the league, it stems from the time of long ago, back when the NFL was still fairly young, and to make sure that they could make payroll and meet their contractual guarantees to players, that they had to put the amount in that they have guaranteed, I think it's for this and next season, into an escrow account. And that was kind of one of the things that was the sticking point for, like, Kyler Murray's contract in the Cardinals, because it was coming off the heels of Deshaun Watson getting that fully guaranteed deal. And it's a little bit different because the ownership situation in Cleveland is such that the owner's money is not all in the football team. His fortune came from other stuff. And the Bidwells are a football family. And so there's that. So I know it does cost, like, if they guarantee Buddha's salary this year, it does double that up, essentially, because they have to move that much money into that escrow account. That said, at minimum, I know Buddha wants, from conversations I've had with people, Buddha at least wants some guarantees for this year, because there is the, and I think this is his agent, and I think this is what you've said, this is par for the course for his agent's clients.
Yeah, and that's why it's interesting to see it and kind of follow along with it, because it's just one of those situations where, as we talked about, from an ability standpoint, he's clearly one of the best players on the team. That's really good. And he is deserved of the money, but he's been one of the best players on the team and the team hasn't been good. And so that's, something that they got to figure out from here and decide what, they're going to do. Yeah. So, and so you just have to figure out where you want to invest. And it's not that you want to get rid of Buddha or actively try to get rid of Buddha or, anything of that nature. But at the same time, you do have to really prepare to start changing the way that this organization is built. And that's one of the things you and I have talked about, right? Is that this safety and linebacker investment has not worked, and it's why you're so depleted along the front, defensive line, at cornerback, at edge rusher, because you just haven't really invested in those premium or premier positions, but you have invested. I mean, the Cardinals have the third highest salary cap on safeties in the NFL. And we like both Buddha and Jalen. Like, we don't see any issues with them. We wouldn't, wish them away by any means. But at the same time, it's not like your defense is playing at a high enough level where you can justify paying safeties that much, right? Like, if your defense is playing well as a collective and your safeties are your best defensive players, that's fine. But when your defense is flat out bad and your safeties are your best defensive players, it's like, can it get that much worse? I guess maybe the new safeties aren't going to make as many open field tackles, but outside of that, you need to start investing up front. You need to start investing along the lines. And so that's just, kind of how you have to look at it. And like we always say, we're on the player's side. We get where Buddha's coming from. I'm just not sure that's the way to continue to construct and operate for this team with all of the issues and holes that they have.
And for me, the one thing I worry about is this commonly used strategy to obtain a better scenario, whether it's a different team where they pay you more money. It doesn't play well in most fan bases, especially ours. Think of how Chandler Jones and Patrick Peterson took a hit in their public perception of them when they went through what they did. The same thing is starting to happen with Buddha, a guy who is like literally everyone loves how he plays and does everything. But now it feels, and some fans are going to get turned off by this because they know he's being paid well. They know he's still got 2 years left on his deal. They know the situation the Cardinals are in. And so it's, I just wonder how this, I hope this doesn't do anything in the locker room, because not that I think there's going to be a sort of fracture, but one of the things that Buddha's become is become kind of the heart and soul of the team. And if he's at odds with the organization, that makes it harder to be that example leader of men within the locker room. And my guess is that with the cachet of respect that he has from his teammates, no one's going to doubt him, and he's going to give everything he's got for his teammates, because that's where it counts, because you're laying things on the line for each other, not for the fans, not for the organization, but you play for the guys in the locker room and your coaches, and will continue to perform at a high level on the field. And then maybe if the new money comes, then everything's back to normal. But we, like, honestly, the fans here have got too used to Larry Fitzgerald, who held the leverage in every contract scenario almost with the Cardinals. And so he never had to do any sort of unsettling public persona, because he always had the leverage and got taken care of because he was in the leverage. He was in control of the situation. But that's the one thing I worry about, is a guy that's basically universally loved to see them begin to sour on such an important dude.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's just one of those situations where you look at it and you just understand where this team is coming from and what they, you know, what they need as a whole. And it's one of those difficult conversations. And we had that conversation about Larry kind of at the end too, right? That this team needed to potentially spend that money elsewhere. And I think that's, again, what you have to look at. I'm not saying that they need to move on or anything like that, but they have to be judicious with how they're working these things. The other thing is, you know, this is a new, regime. And while Buddha is obviously amazing, you also don't know if you want to set a precedent, right?
Right, right.
So like, can you just make this move? Like, that's the other question you have to ask about this whole thing.
Yeah. I have a feeling this is going to linger on for most of the offseason. We don't expect him to participate in OTAs coming up. That's voluntary. I don't know if he's one of those guys, because Jonathan Gannon really kind of played it coy. He said that there were guys in the building who didn't practice. If he's in the building for classroom stuff, and then just not participating in the stuff on the grass, that's one thing. But yeah, we don't expect to see him other than in mini camp and training camp for the mandatory stuff. You know, shades of Kyler Murray last year. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best our Cardinals talk of the web. Blast from the past, a name that we haven't heard in quite some time. We'll talk a little bit about the Kevin Cobb story. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red Podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. We haven't talked about Kevin Cobb. You know, honestly, on this podcast, we really never talked about him, because we started the show in July of 2013. which was by then Cobb was no longer on the team because they had released him. They had released John Skelton after Bruce Arians took over. And so yeah, we didn't really ever get to talk about Kevin Cobb other than lamenting what might have been. But there was a story that came out where Cobb revealed kind of some of the issues that it's about. And it's about concussions, namely. And there were some effects on that, kind of what the league does to protect players, this and that. The whole concussion issue. He ended up retiring in 2013 after he suffered a fourth concussion in his career. The first one came when he was with the Eagles. It turns out that in 2011, now documented, we know that Cobb had turf toe and missed four games or so in the middle of the season, and then suffered a concussion after his second game back. And then in 2012, we kind of know what happened. He lost the starting job to John Skelton in training camp. He actually then became the starter after John Skelton got hurt in the opener, and Cobb led them to the game-winning touchdown. He starts the next three games. The Cardinals go 4-0. And then after getting bloodied and beat to a pulp by the Saints, by the Rams on Thursday Night Football, getting sacked nine times at the end of the Buffalo Bills game, he gets crushed, breaks his sternum, and he's out for the year. And he never played another NFL game because after he was cut by the Cardinals, he signed with the Bills. He had a fluky, stupid injury happen on the sideline surface, but it was like the rubberized surface that they use, and it was wet. He slipped and twisted his knee, and then in a preseason game, suffered his fourth concussion. What's interesting is that of the injuries that we knew about, there was a concussion we never knew about, and he revealed in this that he suffered a concussion in the second game of the season in 2011, his second game with the Cardinals, against the Washington Redskins, then the Redskins. They ended up losing that game 22-21. He got absolutely destroyed by Brian Arakpo. It was a gruesome description of what they said on TV. He never said anything to anyone, but he had a concussion that game. The Redskins came back, and then they had a chance to come back in the final drive, and they just couldn't do it. The offense sputtered. The offense sputtered basically the entire fourth quarter, and they gave up the lead. And for the next four or five weeks, he, without telling anyone, because this is in 2011, right after the lockout, it was the very beginning of like the concussion talk, and I believe that that movie had just come out or was about to come out with Will Smith. And I, like, that man's body just failed him. Now, the interesting thing, and I'll let Seth talk a little bit too, but in this story, Cobb revealed that he told the team later on in the season. So after he suffered a concussion, he came back. Then the Ravens game, they got up 24-3. He injures his team. He gets turf toe, which fans don't understand turf toe. It's a little, he tore basically, he ripped all the ligaments in his toe, and it was gruesome. And so it was very painful. He couldn't even hand the ball off real well. And we remember that he missed a lot of time with the turf toe, and everyone says turf toe, oh, it's just a toe injury, blah, 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 blah. It was pretty bad. Second game back, he got hit early. He took a knee to the helmet early in the game against the San Francisco 49ers, and he actually had a concussion. He then went on to tell the team that he had suffered one earlier in the year and said, since that was now his third concussion of his career, if he were to suffer another one, he's going to retire. And this was on the heels just a year after he had been traded. The Cardinals traded for him and gave him a big contract, which was big for that time. Then what was interesting is the fact, I think, this is my theory, that Ken Wisenhunt, one who insisted that Cobb play after he injured his toe against Baltimore, and even though the team doctor said he should come out, Wisenhunt insisted that he keep playing, so Cobb played. You know, that's football mentality. You play through stuff. When Cobb told the team that, I think it made Wisenhunt a little bit worried. And so when he gave the competition in 2012 in training camp, Cobb Skull, if you guys remember that, I remember that training camp. It was in Flagstaff. It was the last year in Flagstaff. And, you know, we detailed every practice of how Cobb did, how Skelton did. And Skelton ended up winning the starting job. And it was kind of like, well, why? I think the kind of ultimatum that Cobb said probably spooked Wisenhunt and was a major reason why Skelton got the starting job. Now, I've ranted and wandered from that. I'd like to, what were your takeaways from this story for you, Seth, when you heard it?
I mean, the first thing I think is what I've always said. You know, I think you and I do an excellent job to never try and insinuate that guys are soft or are not playing hard. And so I think, you know, like I said, you and I do a nice job of that. And that's props to us. It's why we tend to, most of the time, I would say, side with players. I think you feel the same way, right? That we kind of, you know, side with the players.
Football kind of sucks for that, by the way.
Right. Right. And so we look at it and we, you know, we go that route with it. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it's disappointing. And I think you really saw it after. Now, when did he say again the first concussion was?
It was the second game of the year. It was the middle of the game against the Redskins.
But he continued to play.
He did. Correct? He didn't tell anyone. Look, that in terms of that, that was on him. But that was definitely the culture of the NFL. They didn't have independent spotters back then. So the only thing that happened with concussions would be self-reporting or something obvious that the team doctors saw or trainers saw. And guess what? When it's your starting quarterback, guess what?
Yeah, you tend to overlook those things.
You overlook that. Heck, even now that gets missed. Remember that old mess last year with Tua?
Yeah. And you look at those games, right? So you look at the games. So his first game against Carolina.
They won. Then they lost six straight.
He throws for over 300 yards, right? And two touchdowns. And then after that, those six games that you're mentioning, right? Hold on. It's not clicking like I asked it to. There we go. Now pull up. Wake up. No? Okay, there we go. So in those games, he completed 55% of his passes. He had six touchdowns, eight interceptions. Like Jess said, they went 0-6. And you look back at it now, and by the way, his quarterback rating was 70. Not his QBR, his quarterback rating.
Which is pretty atrocious.
Yeah, like anything below 85 is considered, you know, less than average. So to be 70 is bad. And if you take out the Washington game, four touchdowns, seven interceptions in five games.
And he said in that story that what ended up being the sixth loss in a row was the Ravens game.
Right.
That was the first game that he was right. That he, like, it was a week after their bye, so they came back from the bye, lost another game, but then they played Baltimore. He's in that story, he says it was the first game that he was not dealing with symptoms, and they were rolling. They were up 24-3 on the Ravens in that game. So he was, and then he hurt his toe. When he shouldn't, like, it was, he shouldn't have, he was reckless with the body because he was mobile enough, but wasn't built big enough to take on those type of hits. But you could tell if we notice kind of the stat line, that Baltimore game when he was finally healthy, they were rolling. Then he got hurt again. Then we know the rest of the story. Skelton takes him to 2-2. He comes back. Cobb comes back. They win that game in overtime against the Cowboys. And then,
and by the way, he was really good in that game.
It was nice. It was very efficient, like the type of game that we kind of expect. We didn't, no one expected him to be like Kurt Warner type, but we felt that, you know, kind of a Matt Hasselbeck type, streaky type play. Like you get in a rhythm and you can win with him. Then he takes a concussion. Then Skelton starts the rest of the season. They see some success. The defense starts playing well, and they end up going 8-8, and that goes from there. But yeah, it's a lot. We can look back on that season and see, oh, that's why there were struggles. He was struggling with his head. Now there's some stuff later that happened. Like he really struggled with things post career, some really scary type things. But at least on the Cardinals side of things, it's. I don't want to say, like, this was a discussion on the PHNX show, is did the Cardinals do him dirty? I don't think they did. That was kind of the culture of the NFL back then, so it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. But I'm convinced now that part of the factor, part of the decision that Wisenhunt went with Skelton instead of Cobb, when, honestly, it kind of felt like all through training camp, neither one of those guys pulled ahead of the other. And with the thought of not being able to rely on Cobb, like because of the head injuries, because he said if he suffered another concussion, he would be done. Let's go with the guy to trust a little bit more.
Yeah. And so, you know, you look at it, it's one of those situations where is it a big what if? I don't know. I mean, let's be honest. You know, I was
so excited about Kevin Cobb.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he didn't play poorly, and then like you said, he got injured again, and you know that 2012 season, you know, they were 3-0 or 3-2.
They were 4-0.
Yeah, he didn't technically start the first game.
Yeah, so. He didn't start the first game, so technically they went 3-0, 3-1, and then 4-1 because they won that Bills game in overtime.
Mine says it was a loss.
Wait, was it?
16-19. And that's the one he got injured in again.
Yeah, so they lost in overtime, right? Oh, okay, yeah, that was when Feely hit that 61-yarder to tie the game after he got hurt. Okay.
And so, you know, you look at it and what could have been is definitely a thing. But at the same time, you know, for the Cardinals, it worked out. You really, truly do feel bad for a guy. And it's hard to feel bad for a guy and Kevin Cobb who made so
millions of dollars.
Blah, blah, blah. But like, think about a guy like Kevin Cobb. He finally gets his shot to compete with the guy, and he literally gets injured in his second game of his career, or of his starting career with the Cardinals. So yeah, he made $29 million. That's more money than Jess and I'll ever see in our entire life. And that's fine. But he lost out on so much more. And now, you know, and he really did kind of play scared. And I don't mean to, like, again, question him or anything like that, but he did, don't you think?
You know, if there's one thing that he was known for, was running backwards and to his right.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that, because he took fewer risks that year in 2012 when he played. It's, you know, When he was healthy, he could sling the ball. It's one of those guys. It's just his body failed him. It wasn't anything that was his fault. It's just his body couldn't take the pounding of the NFL. It seemed like, one, he got hit more than the average quarterback would, and that his frame just didn't allow him the same type of toughness that resiliency like Carson Palmer had when you have these larger frame quarterback. But see, he wasn't small, but he was on the leaner end of the traditional quarterback size.
Correct. And he wasn't, you know, like you said, he wasn't an overly thick guy. You know, I mean, 6'3", 218, he's not bad size. But, yeah, I mean, it's just like, sad.
You know, the 230, which was kind of the prototype back then. So he was on the lean end of that.
Well, and in the Wisenhunt offense, which was also the you know, Arians offense. What is that? The Earhart Pickens, where they're airing it out. And it's just, you know, it makes it tough. And so... It's just, it really is a sad situation that's how his career basically unfolded. And we never really got to see what or who he was as a full-time player. But, I mean, who is the guy, without being crass, that the Cardinals knocked out to? Was it a Trent? Remember when the Cardinals knocked him out of a game and basically did similar to his career, right? Like,
yeah, it was Trent Edwards.
Yeah, Trent Edwards, and it was, I don't remember, it may have even been that game we're discussing. I truly don't remember. But you know, there are guys, and Edwards was 6'4 and 230. Like, once you get hit like that, once you get knocked out one time, it's just it literally becomes really difficult for you.
It cut short Troy Aikman's career. It cut short Steve Young's career.
Right. And those guys were obviously much better talents, but at the same time, it's one of those situations. So I wanted to throw this in too, because Kyle Odegaard, compare.bet, just tweeted something out, and it's in regard to Buddha. But I just want to mention it because I thought it was kind of prevalent what you and I were just talking about. Steve Keim caved when DJ Humphries and Marcus Golden did the hold in thing last year. Monty Ozenfort needs to hold firm, even if Buddha makes a lot of noise, you know, and so that's kind of what we're saying, right? Like, this isn't anything against Buddha. It's just not. And I think you and I want to stress that more than anything else, right? Like, we're not anti-Buddha, but at the same time, like, they need to reestablish who's running things there.
Yeah. I will say that the Keim situation with both DJ and Marcus were touch different because they were entering the final year of their deal.
They were. You're correct.
That is the one thing that's different. And I think Humphries in particular, an extension was an inevitability. The Marcus Golden thing was interesting because it ended up being a flop. And the truth is, he did get hurt because he dropped the kettlebell on his toe. But
right, his own fault. But yeah, so to end on the Cobb thing, though, I'm glad, and it sucks that it has to come from this, obviously. But I'm glad that there is some vindication of why he ended up not working out.
Yeah.
As opposed to it just being like, oh, he sucked, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, nope. There's a lot of things that we truly, truly don't know or don't understand. And so I think that's something that we always, always have to keep in mind.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the Nick Rawls, Jonathan Gannon defense, which might look a little bit different than we thought it would. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. I think it's been kind of understood and expected. Seth and I have both discussed this based on what we've seen from the defenses in Minnesota, the defense of Indianapolis, and then Jonathan Gannon's defense last year in Philadelphia, that the Cardinals would officially be running a 4-3. Right? We've gone with that assumption all offseason, right?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, based on personnel, kind of decisions, signings, all of that stuff, I think that's what we believe we will see.
However, a lot of signs. Now, people told me this on Twitter, and I understand this. Jonathan Gannon has been very clear that they're going to be multiple, that they're not going to be, they're going to be a lot of different things. However, if we just look at roster composition, we look at the coaching staff, we look at the roster designations now. Now these, I'm potentially these could change. It looks like the Cardinals are still a 3-4 team. Hear me out. They have an outside linebackers coach, and he works with the edge guys. Okay, that's one. On the roster, they haven't made any changes yet. Now, granted, we're in the voluntary part of the offseason, but when they drafted B.J. Ojulari, you know, as an edge guy, he would probably be a small defensive end. We figured that Cameron Thomas would end up being a defensive end, things like that. However, it's their roster does not have just linebacker defensive line, which is how Indies is how it's in Minnesota and in Philadelphia, how they designated their roster. Still, the Cardinals keep things listed at inside backer and outside backer, which in a 4-3 defense, you have, if you're going to designate linebackers, you're going to have MLB, middle linebacker, and outside backers who aren't edge guys. But right now, we have the guys that we know as edge defenders come out of college, and they have that designation, edge, working with the outside linebackers coach, Zaven Collins playing some outside linebacker in early practices, working with the edge guys. And I know this could change, but I think what we might be looking at, actually, and I don't know how much of this is Austin Fort or just kind of the tradition here that a 3-4 base defense, because technically the Cardinals have been a 3-4 defense for years, though last year they really weren't a 3-4 defense. It was basically a 4-3 with how they had their personnel last year. We might be looking at what on paper is a 3-4 base defense, which makes personnel kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, and you look at, obviously, it's incredibly tentative right now. But our lads does a nice job of trying to, like, stack what they're hearing or what teams are willing to give them about depth chart. So if you're interested, go to ourlads.com. Not a sponsor of the show, but just a good reference and tool that you can play around with. And you look at it, they have their alignment, you know, remaining the same. And obviously these are subject to change, right? But you look at it, you've got defensive end, nose tackle, defensive tackle with two outside backers, two inside backers, as you're talking about the 34. And when you look at what they have, you know, obviously we know Ledbetter, Fotu, Lawrence. They added Carlos Watkins, who's kind of a true nose guy, right?
Collier, though, is interesting because he's a solid 4-3 out defensive end, though I think they're going to be using him inside.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. At 6'2", 290, he actually fits the profile more similarly to what you have in Jonathan Ledbetter playing that 34 defensive end spot, right? Like a souped up kind of power guy that's got interior quickness if need be, because you're flanking him. And obviously this is early and they're just piecing things together, but you know, with Myjai Sanders and Cam Thomas, like,
and B.J. Ojulari, who interestingly enough profiles much better to a 3-4 outside backer.
Yeah, and so when you just look at all of it, you just kind of, you see that right now you, from a couple of things, one, your best players, unfortunately, and this is not a shot at anybody, your best players remain at linebacker, right? Zaven, obviously the addition of Kaiser White, and then whatever you're going to do with Isaiah Simmons, and safety, obviously Buddha and Jalen, as we talked about. So realistically, with what this team has at this moment, you don't necessarily want to have too many true defensive linemen on the field at this point, right? Like, I, and again, we like Lekki Potiu, Rashard Lawrence. We wish that Lawrence could stay healthy. We're very intrigued with LJ Collier. I think both you and I are. We are excited about Watkins, understanding that he is a rotational nose tackle kind of only, right? Like we're excited about that, but he's done it well for a number of years. But if I read to you, you know, Ledbetter, Fotu, Lawrence, Collier, Watkins, Kevin Strong, another name they added, and then obviously Dante Stills, and you can even throw Jacob Slade because of how much money they gave him. Or Sanders, Collins, White, Thomas Simmons, Ojulari, Barnes, and, you know, even throw in like Josh Woods or Owen Papoa. Which group excites you more, right? Like which group are you going to be like, oh, we would rather have more of those guys on the field than those guys? And so I think you're right. Until they get guys that can run more of a 4-3 or 4-2-5 with, you know, Simmons being that other safety / nickel kind of guy. Don't you think that you and doesn't it tell you about Rallis and Gannon and their flexibility? Doesn't that kind of make you excited too?
It does. The fact that they've been in what are traditional on paper 4-3 defenses, and they come in and you're like, okay, we're still working with the 3-4 roster. And I know there's minimal difference, honestly, because of sub packages. It's really kind of minimum. But just the fact that we all assumed 4-3, yet they still keep that they have their pass rushing coach is an outside linebackers coach. And which is kind of fun because let's go back to 2018 when Steve Wilks was talking about, well, we're gonna be hybrid, we're gonna be multiple, and he straight up ran a 4-3 that he's always run, which we sort of expected, and that was really a sticking point to the front office because they felt deceived. I didn't feel deceived. I actually felt that the move to a 4-3 minus Hassan Reddick, Padeon Buchanan was a better fit for most of the defense than running something as an odd front. But 3-4-4-3, they're mostly, the concepts are kind of the same overall. Most defenses look fairly the same. And I guess, but I just find it very interesting that all the expectation we had, and while maybe they make the positional designations, but I figured that though now those changes on the roster would have happened already once they started sort of this part of camp, and they would be calling their edged guys defensive ends, which they're not right now.
Right, and they're calling them, you know, outside linebackers, and so, you know, and with the addition of Ojulari, again, he fits kind of the Reddick profile. He's a little bit longer and things of that nature. But, you know, you look at it, I think ideally they want to run more of like a 3-3-5 with that edge guy and maybe Ojulari or Sanders or Thomas, whoever kind of hits the best on that. And roll them up, and then you're rushing 4 consistently, and then you can play games with Isaiah Simmons, Buda Baker, Jalen Thomas, and you really have a lot of things you can do. But again, one of the things that made the Philadelphia Eagles defense great was the way Jonathan Gannon deployed those weapons. And let's just be honest. He doesn't have Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox.
Nope. Or Jordan Davis in his pocket. Or
right. And he doesn't even have a Josh Sweat. I mean, Josh Sweat would 100% be the best pass rusher on this team. So, you know, we're hoping that Ojulari turns out. We're hoping that Sanders and Thomas continue to grow. But, you know, he's going to, and that's why I said, again, that's what makes him interesting and why you like him so far is because you're like, you can see that it's like, oh, I'm gonna try to find a way to get my most talented players on the field and in a position to be successful, knowing that up front right now we just is not our forte. And yeah, like I said, like Josh Sweat, the last three seasons, 6 sacks, 7.5 sacks, 11 sacks. That would legitimately be the best pass rusher on the Cardinals roster right now.
The one thing for me that's interesting, if they're going to be running a more 3-4 look, how are they going to use? Are they going to put Saban on the edge? What are they going to do with Sand? Like Simmons, White, Collins? We've always understood. Okay, that's perfect. You run a quote on air quote 4-3 defense. Those are your three linebackers. But if you're What are they doing then? That's the part for me that's going to be, are they going to rotate linebackers more than we normally see teams do? Because in a 3-4 scheme, unless you just don't like your linebackers, you usually have two guys that you don't take off the field. Unless you've got limited skill guys. And with the guys that the Cardinals have drafted, because Kaiser White ideally is going to be your Mike, in this case, in a 3-4 play caller. But you've got first-round picks, Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins. Those are supposed to be guys you don't take off the field. It's going to be really interesting to see how they use both of those. Zaven was playing with the edge guys early in some of the workouts, and so we'll see if that continues. But I'm more and more intrigued about what we're going to see and I'm interested to see what happens with what they do with training camp this year, because the Cardinals were super open before and they seem to bottle things up a little bit with Cliff Kingsbury a little bit. I wonder what the take is going to be this time around, or when they had mini camp and media members can be there, how much they show, because that'll reveal some, and how much, if they show things, how much we're allowed to talk about.
Right. And so, this is what's going to be fun over the offseason, especially when we see some things that we can talk about, moving forward. And then when we see the things that we can't talk about, so you and I are having conversations off the air and going, can you believe that's what they're doing?
and we might allude to some things because it's different, what shows up in print on the internet and what we can talk about hypothetically here. A little bit different. Anyway, coming up next on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. Last little segment is talking about, exciting, punter long snapper. Looks like we're closing the door on one air and opened a door on another. That's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web. It would appear, and I thought this was probably the case, but I think especially now, I think we've seen the end of Andy Lee. I don't know if it was him deciding he's done with football because he hasn't announced anything, but he hasn't been signed by another team, and he hasn't been signed by the Cardinals. And the Cardinals just signed a punter, and honestly, I'm glad, because I didn't want to go into training camp with Nolan Cooney as the option, even though he might turn out to be good. He's never done it. He's never done it at the NFL level yet. They signed Matt Hawk, former ASU punter, but for the last seven seasons has been the punter for an NFL team and has not missed any games in his NFL career. He spent time with the Bills, Dolphins, and the Colts. It was last year. He was their punter last year, which makes it kind of interesting. He's turning 29 this year. But do you think, as I think as well, that we've officially closed the door on Andy Lee?
Barring injury, I would think so. And do you think, obviously, he's still a free agent, but do you think Andy wants to go through all the offseason workouts and do all that stuff?
Let's be honest, punters, if you've seen them do it, their workouts are like their OTA, their offseason work, it's dinking around. I mean, they obviously work out, but.
Right. But it's, to your point, they have their own kind of stuff. And you look at it, his net yards this year were right in the middle of his career average. you know, he's definitely fallen down since 18, 19, and 21, where he was a full yard, net yard above that. And that's what matters, as we know, net yardage. And so, you know, and then inside the 20, he hasn't been great at that, you know, especially the last couple of years. Now, obviously, you can say, well, you know, where is he punting from, this, that, and the other. But the last 2 years have been two of the worst five of his career in terms of percentage of punts going inside the 20. Whereas he's also higher in the last couple of seasons in terms of touchbacks. And so, you know, how much longer do you want a guy to play for? 19 years is a long ass time.
Right.
At let's be honest, you've been a teacher for what, 20 years now?
22.
Yeah. And you're probably like, you probably are usually like at the end of the school, you're like, I need a break, and I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can come back next year, like, you know. So it's just one of those situations where I think bringing in Matt Hack is smart. He's been a successful NFL punter, giving the young guy a shot as well against smart. And God forbid you just make a phone call at the end, right?
My one thing, because it also appears that they've moved on from Aaron Brewer, because they have two long snappers in camp on the roster right now. Joro Fortunato, who was a long snapper for the Packers for about a half a season. And then they just brought in an undrafted rookie, I think Oklahoma State's Matt Hembro. And they haven't brought back Brewer, which makes this very interesting. I almost expected the entire special teams battery to be changed over. But when they re-signed Matt Prater for 2 years, I was like, okay, maybe we're going to see the whole group back together again, because what did we see out of Matt Prater when either long snapper or holder was changed? It was not good. And to bring back Prater, I thought it was going to be a lock that we saw Lee or Brewer, but it looks like we're going to have neither, which is, to me, quite interesting.
Yeah, and do you think this is, again, a whole regime deal where they're looking at it and going, hey, and here's the thing, though. I mean,
because I know Jeff Rogers kind of referred to hoping that they would bring them back. So I don't know. I don't know if that was something that was said, or it, honestly, because we haven't heard anything otherwise, maybe Brewer and Lee were done. There's always that possibility.
And that's what I'm wondering, if they're just both done. I mean, again, you only have so much time you want to get prepared for this again. And I think both of them getting hurt last year kind of, you know, changed things too, right? Like, they both didn't get through a full season. So you look at it and you go, you know, do I really want to go out there and do this again? I mean, I'm looking right now, Andy Lee made more money than Kevin Cobb in his career. He's up to $34 million. that's again, not a bad life, right? Like, that's a good one. And then Aaron Brewer, the long snapper, his career earnings, and he's played for 11 years. Wow. Just under $10 million. So again, you know, will he want to do that? Is that something he will want to do more? You know, he's been with the organization for 8 years, so, which is what, four coaching regimes. So I doubt it had anything to do with him not acquiescing or being interested in being back. It probably just had more to do with those two deciding they were ready to move on.
Very possibly so. With that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seared Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. We will bring back a a shorter show later this week. That will be our prediction show, as much as we can try to predict wins and losses. And then next week, we will probably have the week off. I might do a solo pod. I've got high school graduation for my other job. And, you know, it'll be the very beginning of OTA, so it probably won't be much to talk about. So we'll be back again on Thursday night, or dropping on Friday, with probably a small break after that. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is Rise Up Secret Podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.